Welcome to the Hilltop United Methodist Church podcast. Hilltop is located in Sandy, Utah, 985 East, 10,600 South. Locals would say 106th. Our two worship services are at 9 o'clock and 10:30. Hope to see you this Sunday. God bless. Bye-bye. Let's start by going back over and reviewing just a second, what it is that we read out of the Acts passage. Peter and John are walking into the temple. They're going there to pray. And as they're walking in, they encounter a man who's been lame since birth. And his friends, probably his relatives, have put him there outside the temple to collect alms. Now, that's an important part of being Jewish, is that sharing your bounty, sharing your blessing back with someone who is in a more needy state, it's part of what they do, part of what we do. And as Peter and John are walking in, their eyes lock. Their eyes lock. And the alms taker thinks he's going to get something. He's locked in with his eyes, and he thinks that Peter or John is going to give him something. Peter says something very interesting. He says, "I have no silver or gold. I have no silver or gold. But what I give you in the name of Jesus Christ, stand up and walk." Doesn't have silver, doesn't have gold, but he's going to give him Jesus. Stand up and walk. Then the passage says, "And he took him by the right hand and raised him up." It's the same verb in Greek as it was in Mark. Jesus was raised up out of the tomb. Passive voice, raised by someone else. Here it's Peter raised him up. It's an echo of Easter. "And immediately his ankles and feet were made strong. Jumping up, he stood and began to walk, and he entered the temple with them, walking and leaping and praising God." Now, let's take this scene for a moment, and let's sort of examine it at a couple of levels. The first level I'd like to examine it from is the level of the apostle, Peter. Peter and John, as the apostles, walk in. All right? And as they look out, look at this man as they walk in, where is he at this particular moment in relation to holiness? He's outside. He's outside the temple. He is outside the place of holiness. He has been left there. He's right there on the cusp of it, but he is outside. And Peter and John don't seem to be bothered by that. They don't seem to be bothered by their willingness to speak to him, despite the fact that he is outside the place of holiness rather than inside the place of holiness. What is it that Peter says to him? He doesn't say, "If you believe in Jesus Christ, stand up." Rather, he says, "In the name of Jesus Christ, stand up." Who's got the faith in this? Who has the faith of what's going on? It's Peter. It's John. This unnamed man is raised up by the healing power that Peter offers to him. I would suggest to you that even though we look at this passage and we say, would not it be a wonderful idea if we could do that now, here in this 21st century? And I would say to you, we can. We can do some of that. And I would like to offer you three thoughts on this as it relates to healing, spiritual healing, and physical healing, and how we go about doing that. One of the ways we do it is by doing no harm. First, do no harm. What's the prime directive from Star Trek? Don't mess with the local culture in some kind of way. I can't remember precisely what Gene Roddenberry had with that, but it was essentially the Enterprise was told to go to these foreign civilizations and leave them alone. Don't let your way become their way. Don't contaminate them. All right? Well, what we have here with this particular passage is this chance for us to go in there and see it and understand that one of the things that we want to do is to do no harm to that civilization, to that person. How do we do that? How do we do no harm? I would say part of how we do no harm is thinking before we talk. Thinking before we talk. Article in this week's, in February's New York Times is a Duke professor, 35 years old. She's an expert on the church out of Houston, the Prosperity Gospel. And she's 35 years old, and she has cancer. Stage 4 stomach cancer. Stage 4 stomach cancer. One of her neighbors comes over and says, knocks on the door and says to her husband, all these things, God has a reason for all these things. Husband says, well, I'd be curious as to what that reason is. I'd like to know what that reason is. That's an example of where we walk into a situation like that and we feel compelled to bring order out of chaos. And we feel like it's our responsibility to try to interpret the world in some kind of way that makes sense. And we utter these kind of inane platitudes like this, which are far from comforting. They're, matter of fact, exactly the opposite. They're not comforting at all. Rabbi Kushner talks in his book, When Bad Things Happen to Good People. He talks in there about a young man whose father dies. And his great aunt says, basically, I guess God needed another voice for the choir. Not only is he hurt by this, he sort of accepts his aunt's comment as valid. And so what happens? Not only is he still hurting from the pain of having lost his father, but now he's mad at God. God took his father. That's the explanation that he's been offered. I would say one of the elements that we have to do with the area of healing is reminding ourselves to be intelligent in what it is that we say. If John Wesley would advocate that we need to base everything we say on Scripture, use our own experience, use the tradition of the church, and we integrate that with reason, if that's how we pull all this together, I would suggest to you our reason would tell us that walking in and, in theory, trying to comfort someone with comments like, this all had to happen for a reason, God needs another voice for the angel choir, is far from comforting. It's not for us to provide explanation. It's not for us to provide order. Where it is for us in this area of healing is to potentially provide a ministry of quiet presence. Sometimes all the people that are broken, all they really want is someone to be quietly present with them. Not trying to ram Jesus down their throat, not trying to say, if you just accept Jesus in your life, you're going to be made well. Sometimes we just have to walk in and be prepared to quietly hold their hand. Rolf Jacobson is a professor of Old Testament at Luther Seminary. 50 years old, 35 years ago, he had cancer in both of his legs. He had to have the legs amputated. 15 years old when he had to have this happen. How many of his friends do you think came over to visit him and be with him in this moment of pain? The answer was zero. None came over to see him. Sometimes our role in the healing process is not to come and try and provide order out of chaos, but rather our task is to come over and be prepared to be a quiet presence That's all he wanted 35 years ago. It's all he was looking for 35 years ago was his friends to show up and be with him in this moment of brokenness. That's what he wanted. His invitation to us today is that, remember that. And I'm mindful, I used to work in a hospital. I'm mindful of how hard it can be to walk into a hospital and see body fluids being collected in jars and basins and places. I understand that. Believe me, I understand that. But that doesn't mean that we don't go do those things. Remember what we talked about last week? It's this idea of being willing to be a witness in such a way that you go beyond the normal, go beyond what's expected of you. Our praise band, I go with them on Friday nights down to the Salt Lake Rescue Mission. We have people here that have gone down and served beef stew and passed out snickerdoodle cookies to the homeless. You're helping them with a ministry of presence. You're telling them that they are special. You're telling them that they're important. And most important, we're giving them a gospel that tells them, that doesn't tell them, they deserve to be where they are. Part of the dilemma we have living in this country, and this issue of about where people are in their various lives, is old. It sort of came over with the Pilgrims, came over with the Puritans. It's this idea of the fact that if you're broken, you've done something to deserve it. We don't talk about it much, but it nonetheless is it informs how we seem to see the world. And it's made manifest in a very, very powerful way down in Houston with this prosperity gospel that they have, which is essentially, if I'm well off, if I'm in a good place, it's because God has blessed me because I'm in a strong relationship with God. Implied, parenthetically, is that if you're broken in some kind of way, financially, health, spiritually, marriages, you name it, you're out of relationship with God, and God is punishing you. That's horse manure. That is absolute horse manure. And I don't understand how it is that, and frankly, you and I in the church get indicted with that. We get charged with that kind of viewpoint. And we need to be prepared to intelligently offer. That's not what we believe. That's not what we believe. That may be some people who believe that, but we're not part of that group who believes that. So point number one is, what role does the church have as it relates to the broken? And I would say pointing to Jesus, but reminding ourselves that many of the broken are outside of our sanctuary, outside of our places of safety. And that is where we need to go minister to them. And when we go down to the Salt Lake Rescue Mission. Did I do that right, Marilyn? Okay. The Salt Lake Rescue Mission, or we take clothes to Dowojibako, Utah, or our kids go to Native American reservations and repair houses. We're not asking them, do they believe in Jesus? We're saying, we're going to be the hands and feet of Jesus in the world, and we're going to be part of healing. So the church has an important role with that healing. Now, the second element of the scene that I would suggest to us is the nature of the broken man himself. Now, I just talked to you there about Rolf Jacobson at Luther Seminary, and he's broken, and what he really wants is this idea of somebody just coming to visit with him, be with him in his pain, be with him as he experiences his pain. But I would say to you, one of the things that we need to do is remind ourselves that there's been times in our lives that we've been broken. We have a set of flowers up here from the Locks saying thank you. There was a time 2 weeks ago that we experienced brokenness in our lives, and the community called Hilltop coalesced around them and helped them go from a place of brokenness, from pain, from hurting, to a place of wholeness. And how did we do that? By a quiet ministry of presence. We didn't sit there and say to them, your mother-in-law has been called to the angel choir. We instead just sat down and held their hands and let them cry a little bit, and we listened to them, and we just, a quiet ministry of presence. That having been said, there's been times in our various lives when things cause us to be broken. Sometimes there's people in this church who've come in and said, I can't make next month's rent. I can't make next month's mortgage. And because of the generosity of the United Methodist Women, among other things, I have some resources that I can help with that. We help move people from a place of brokenness to a place of healing. This last winter, at Christmas, the United Methodist Women gave me $500. Said, please use this internally within our church for children of parents that you believe will not have Christmas if we don't do that. And that's exactly what happened. This church gave two families Christmas when they wouldn't have had it. That's an example of how we have been willing to say and willing to act out of our attitude towards caring for those within our midst that are broken, and we want to do that. I would suggest to you that all of us have been recipients of God's grace. All of us have been recipients of God's grace. And so it's up for us to remind ourselves of that and to have an attitude of gentleness and kindness and love when things happen that we have to be in ministry to others. Now, I think the third group, though, is the one that bothers me perhaps the most. And that's the group that has been walking past this man for years, and they can recognize him when he's inside the grounds and when he's inside the temple. But you wonder, what have they done to try to help him in some kind of way? Did they give him alms? It's unknown. It's unstated. But they seem surprised that he's there. Joyfully there, I might add. And what is it that they did? They just sort of walked by him. How often is it that we are like that group of people? That we just walk by those that are broken? We don't even sit there and say, I don't have any silver, I don't have any gold. Rather, we just walk by them. We just don't even let our eyes lock into it. You all have been downtown. I've been in downtown Denver. I've been in downtown Atlanta. I've been in downtown Washington. Don't look at them. When they're sitting there wanting to have you give them some money, don't look at them. What does Peter do? He looks at them. Our church goes down on a Friday night once a month, and we look at the broken. We look at those that are broken. And I would say it changes your heart. If you're willing to go down there and see the situation, see what they're going through, experience that a little bit, share with them how they sleep on the floor and call that a blessing. I would say to you that we're better off for that. And that's one reason I want us to come back and tell that story. I don't want to be part of a body of people that just walks past them and is unwilling to look them in the eye. I don't know if Luke is intentionally offering a negative indictment of those that are inside the temple and have been surprised by the blessing that was there of how Peter and John are able to raise this man up and bring him into a place of holiness and to be made well. I don't know if that's his intent or not, but I read it that way. I need to read it as a negative observation about what it is the people could have done and did not. So what are we asked to do in this particular scene? I think we are asked to be part of the healing process that goes on. Whether it's spiritual healing or physical healing, sometimes the physical healing is just feeding them, giving them food, giving them a place to stay, giving them dignity. That's part of it. But I believe the church is called to do that. Who is the one who's done the healing here? Peter. Peter, the rock upon which the church is built. That's who's there showing it for us. Number two, it's for us to remember that there's been times in our lives that we've been broken. And what happened? People came and ministered to us. I had 5 eye surgeries in 2005. 5! I can tell you, great joy I had when people came to visit me. They weren't all Methodist. There was one Jewish young man who came to visit me, just to be with me and talk to me, and just so I would not be lonely. Sometimes it's just this willingness to be, remember that, and to say that you want to share that with others. Finally, it's this chance for us to offer a critique back to ourselves when it is that we walk by those that need our care, those that need our love, those that need our nurture, those that need the healing that can be offered by treating them with dignity, treating them with grace, treating them as if they mean something, because they do. They do mean something. We have sign up down the hallway there. Go down to the mission on the Salt Lake Rescue Mission on Friday nights. I invite you to go. It's a profound experience. You need to go do that. But I would say, even if you don't go do that, keep reminding yourself that there are so many broken outside of our enclave that we need to invite in. Not inviting the man, come and believe in Jesus Christ. Just come in and be healed. That's where we go. Now, the choir just sang a little bit about this element of how it is that we read the 23rd Psalm. We just sang the 23rd Psalm for all means and purposes. What page is it in your 817 or something? It's in your bulletin. What page does it say? 8 what? 754. Okay. Take your hymnals out and go to 754. Now, that's not the one I want, guys. Does that say 754 in the hymnal, in the bulletin? Yeah. Hang on a second. I'm having trouble with my eyes. Forgive me here. 754. Well, that's not right. I'm looking for the one that is in the... forgive me here. I should have paid closer attention. Bad on me. Okay. It's 8-something. 873. Turn to 873. Forgive me. And what I want you to do as we read this, I'll stop. When we get to it, I want to focus on, He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for His namesake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Why? For Thou art with me. Even in these moments of pain, God is with us. Everybody found it? Ready? The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for His name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. For Thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, thy comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. The words of comfort we find from that are the fact that God is with us and does not abandon us. That's the words we all need to keep reminding ourselves of when we experience people that are broken and we get a chance to heal them. Point them towards God. Offer them that kind of healing. But at the same time, don't be afraid to let silence be the defining moment. Hilltop is located in Sandy, Utah, 985 East, 10,600 South. Locals would say 106th. Our two worship services are at 9 o'clock and 10:30. Hope to see you this Sunday. God bless. Bye-bye.